Okay, up next we have Darren Culp. Darren received his initial postgraduate training in city and regional planning and then detoured into a 22-year career in the financial services sector. His self-described, midlife crisis master's degree in international affairs at Columbia ultimately led him to his current position at the National Center for Disaster Preparedness. Over the last 4 years, he has participated in a variety of studies that have attempted to refine the concept and process of recovery for major disasters. So, Darren.
Okay. Well, so I've outed myself. I've told you all that I have no professional experience or education in public health. My mother seems to think I'm a nice person in spite of that, so you'll make your own decision. You all probably know or remember that at the end of May 2011, one of the most powerful and most destructive tornadoes in U.S. history ripped through Joplin, Missouri, a city of about 50,000, and it displaced roughly one-third of the population. You'll see some of the statistics in a moment. Well, because one of the things we do at the National Center for Disaster Preparedness is study how individuals and households and communities recover from disasters, two of us, David Abramson, who's the deputy director, and I, went to Joplin at the beginning of December last year, and we spent 3 days there. We interviewed about 25 people in total from all different segments of the community. Many of them were involved in the public-private partnership we refer to in the title of this. It's called the Citizens Advisory Recovery Team, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. Should I be going up? Should I be going? Okay, so I'll get through this one quickly. I have no relationships to disclose. So what I want to do is tell you a little bit about the tornado. Shouldn't have clicked this one quite yet, but the tornado's path was 22 miles wide, but within those 22 miles was a 6-mile segment where the winds were recorded at EF4 and EF5. EF4 means greater than 166 miles per hour. EF5 means greater than 200 miles per hour. So now, just keep that in mind. This is where we are at the Moscone Center. The cable car is just in the upper left out of the picture at Powell and Market. So now here's the EF4, EF5 path of the tornado overlaid on San Francisco. For those of you who may be natives, you know the names of the neighborhoods. For those of you who are tourists like I am, you still can get the feel for how immense this event was. So what were the major impacts of this tornado? Well, 8,000 structures destroyed or severely damaged. About 7,500 of those were private homes. 4,000 totally destroyed, another 3,500 uninhabitable. 500 businesses, 6 school buildings were totally destroyed, 4 were unusable for some period of time while they were rebuilt. 162 people died, and somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 were severely wounded and survived. So here are some of the other impacts. Besides what I just mentioned, the tornado wiped out a huge portion of the city's healthcare infrastructure. The building in the picture in the lower right is the former Mercy St. John's Regional Medical Center, which was a 367-bed hospital, which is now gone. It's been demolished. But in addition to, and that cut the city's hospital beds in half, but you can see that it also took out many other sorts of healthcare facilities. Two other things that it did that I don't have slides for. Last November, I was at a conference where healthcare professionals, mental health professionals from Joplin were talking about a very disconcerting and significant increase in things like suicides, child abuse, alcohol and drug abuse, problem gambling, domestic violence, and rapes. Now, they didn't have evidence to directly connect this to the tornado, but this was overwhelming to hear those sorts of numbers just 6 months after the tornado. The other thing worth mentioning is that it produced 3 million cubic yards of rubble. Now, that's just a small fraction of the rubble produced by Hurricane Andrew in Florida or Hurricane Katrina on the Gulf, but it's actually more rubble than produced by the destruction of the World Trade Center on 9/11. So let me just show you now some quick pictures of what Joplin looked like immediately after the tornado. So the amazing thing about this picture to me is the totality of the destruction that it stretches as far as the eye can see. In fact, one of the things that first responders said over and over again is that in the first couple of weeks, they just had trouble navigating. Even police and fire and EMS people who did this every day of the week, they couldn't find landmarks to find where they were going. This is what is left of St. John's Regional Medical Center, and you can see their medevac helicopter in the front. This is a little bit of gallows humor, which we found helped people get through the day in Joplin, even 6 months after the fact. If you look above the speed limit, it says Beautify Joplin. So here's a topic that we only heard mentioned once, and not surprisingly, by the city's public health officer. This is a headline from the Joplin Globe a little bit before we went there, lead contamination found in storm's main path. Three things happened as a result of the storm. One is a huge number of trees were uprooted. Second, people began, as they started the process of rebuilding, they had to rip out the foundations of destroyed homes. And third, they began excavating new foundations or slabs to replace their homes and businesses. And what this did was it brought to the surface a lot of lead that had been used as building construction material when the area was originally built up. Joplin is part of an area called the Tri-State Mining District that also includes Oklahoma and Kansas. The Joplin part is on the right side of the picture. It was the most active lead and zinc mining area in the United States for many, many years, and at the height of the mining activity, there were more than 200 active lead mines in Joplin, and smelting and mining and milling activities continued there well into the 1970s. By the 1980s, EPA began the process of documenting the environmental damage. A Superfund site was created in 1991. There was extensive, I don't know if the right word for this is tailings, but piles of mining and milling waste, over 10,000 acres, substantial ground and surface water contamination, and somewhere around 2,500 backyards at private homes were contaminated by particulates that had been produced by the smelting activity. So this has been a remediation that's ongoing for 20 years, and lots of progress has been made, but it still has probably another 10 years to go. I'm going to skip over that one. I'm just going to mention that EPA has been very forthcoming with help for Joplin. As of last August, they determined that there were close to 200 private homes and a number of city parks that needed remediation. And now homeowners have to have lead testing done. They have to have contaminated soil carted away before they can build. All this costs a lot of money. EPA has given Joplin about $3 million for that purpose. So now I'm going to talk more about this public-private partnership that was the focus of many of our interviews. They call themselves the Citizens Advisory Recovery Team, and it was a self-selected group of people who had been involved in civic activities in Joplin for 10 years or so. They all had a fairly high degree of knowledge of each other, high degree of confidence and trust in each other, and they did not go out of their way to make this an all-inclusive, everybody in the community is involved. So there were certain segments of the community who did not participate in this at all. Their purpose was to begin thinking about the long-term recovery of the community, whatever that might mean. And this was at a period when the rubble was still everywhere. The debris removal had barely even begun, and these people were farsighted enough to be thinking about that. Early in July, or maybe late June, they formed themselves into four divisions, which they called sectors. You'll notice that the word health doesn't appear in any of those sectors. They wrote a mission statement for each of those sectors, and the word health didn't appear in any of those mission statements either. So when I get to what they actually produced, you'll see that health was very much on their mind. Just want to tell you a little bit more about who they were. They included representatives of the business and real estate communities, banks, utilities, the CEOs of the two major hospital systems in the city, some NGOs, a public health officer, people from the school system. So fairly broad, but still not all-inclusive by any means. I just want to show you a few of the things that were going on in the city at the same time that this group was beginning its deliberations. One is the removal of the debris. This is a corner in Joplin a week after the tornado, similar to the slides I showed you earlier. This is that same corner about 9 weeks later. they were finding ways to deal with the destruction of 10 schools. 36 hours after the tornado, the superintendent of schools stuck his neck out and said, we're going to open schools on schedule for the 2011-2012 school year. 85 days later, the school system made good on that. The top picture is Joplin High School the day after the tornado. The bottom is the temporary high school in a mall building, and they opened it and all the other schools 85 days later, and they had about a 95% retention rate for their students. And also during this period, volunteers were swarming, that's not a very nice sounding word, flooding into Joplin from all over the country. When we were there in early December, they had statistics that they had already registered about 150,000 to 170,000 volunteers, which is more than 3 volunteers for every permanent resident of Joplin. One other thing that I don't have a slide for, but which is important to mention, there are 2 major healthcare systems in Joplin. One is the Mercy system, whose hospital was destroyed. Another one is called Freeman Health System. Within a matter of days of the tornado, the Mercy system, which is based in St. Louis, announced that they would build a comparable size hospital in Joplin, and also that they would invest money in the medical staff of the destroyed hospital to basically keep them in Joplin for up to 3 years until the new hospital was completed, so that they'd be there and ready to staff the new hospital. At the same time, the Freeman system almost immediately decided to build out 2 floors in one of its hospital buildings. That added 60 hospital beds in about 6 months. They also instituted a 12-bed step-down ICU and added 20 psych beds almost immediately. So CART got active in July and August 2011, and they focused for the first month and a half on eliciting community input. They basically encouraged residents of Joplin to tell them, what would you like the new and improved Joplin that we're going to rebuild? What should it look like? What should it have that it doesn't have now? Be pie in the sky. Don't be constrained by concerns about politics, cost, practicalities. Just tell us what you think you would like to see. So they had 2 major community meetings. At the first one, they put up big white boards and they handed out yellow post-it notes, and you can see the kinds of things that people wrote down. So there were hundreds of these post-it notes. The CART people collected all of them, faithfully recorded them, typed them all up, put them in what turned out to be a 50-page book that they distributed all over the city in churches and schools and banks and public libraries, just so that the citizens could see that what they had said, someone was actually paying attention to it. And the CART staff then also tried to distill this into something more manageable so that when they had their second meeting, they had a much more limited set of options for people to consider, and they handed out these blue stickies and said, vote for the ones that you think are most important. And CART also went out to various other locations in Joplin to try and gather information. They went to the site where FEMA had set up about 500 temporary housing units, and they went door to door and they asked the same sorts of questions, what would you like? They went downtown for several cultural events and stopped people on the street, and they also went out to a local college. This is just a shot of one of the technical assistance meetings that FEMA held for the CART members. FEMA brought in a team of 7 members from across the country, basically let the local Joplin people decide how to run this process, what sort of assistance they wanted, and FEMA got very high grades from Joplin for this. So, first week of November, the CART has prepared and delivered to the Joplin City Council this report called Listening to Joplin, which is an extended version of what I've just described to you. And they present this report to the City Council, which goes through the ceremonial and symbolic gesture of accepting the report, meaning we appreciate and acknowledge the hard work you've done. We're not actually voting on anything tonight. We're not endorsing anything, but we want this to be the basis for moving forward. And they then appointed another committee that consisted of members of the City Council and the Board of Education and the Chamber of Commerce to do a second round of prioritizing with this and to come back with the top priorities and a strategy for how to implement them and fund them. So finally, I get to the recommendations that might have something to do with public health. And this is from the infrastructure and environment segment that I showed you on that list of 4 sectors before. And I've broken it down into 2 parts. The first 3 really get down to something very simple, getting folks in Joplin out of their houses and walking and doing something active. So it doesn't sound like very much, but when you think that people over a period of 2 or 3 months said, yeah, one of the most important things for us is to have bike lanes and sidewalks and a trail system. It was very consistent with prior efforts in Joplin to comply with certain things that they'd pulled out of Healthy People 2010 that really focused on getting the couch potatoes in Joplin off their couches. The rest of the recommendations had to do with waste storm and wastewater, stormwater management, recycling, reforestation. And many people wanted all the utilities put underground, but that clearly wasn't going to happen. And there were many other recommendations of the CART that had to do with things like zoning, where mixed-use zones could occur, building design styles, things that really had, I guess that may have had a health implication, but that weren't really focused on that. So just, I should have had handouts, that would have been helpful, but I didn't think about that. But there are a couple of things, if anybody is interested, I'll be glad to give you the information on how to access this. We have a full case study describing the visit and this whole process in a lot more detail. The Center for Preparedness Education that's based in Omaha, it's run by Creighton University School of Medicine and University of Nebraska Medical Center, had a fantastic conference last November in which they had firsthand testimony of the people who were in both the destroyed hospital as the tornado struck and in the surviving hospital as hundreds of severely injured people showed up. It reduced me to tears, left me breathless, and if you have any interest in this, go watch those videos. It's just overpowering. I also would recommend this book by the city manager of Joplin. It's his diary. It doesn't have very strong literary values, but it's a great play-by-play of the things that a political leader and an administrative leader has to deal with in a disaster. And it's available where all fine books are sold, and I do have no relationship with it. Okay? Thank you very much. Nobody should feel compelled to ask me a question. Okay.
How much of the recommendations as far as like the infrastructure change actually
been? There's actually been, I read the Joplin Globe on a daily basis for about 6 months after I was there, and many of the recommendations actually have found their ways into local ordinances by now.
And the gray water recycling, has that happened?
Those have not happened yet. They've really focused on things that were related to getting housing rebuilt and commercial development back. But I've no doubt, given their attitude, the folks in Joplin had an almost, I wouldn't say superior attitude about how they were going to pull off their recovery, but there was definitely a little bit of swagger there, like, we're going to show the rest of you, when we were there, you East Coast dudes, the way recovery is done. And so far they have a lot to show for that attitude. They've done very well. Yes?
Aren't there existing memorandums or just agreements between the hospitals around responding to an emergency and sharing resources? And wasn't there kind of a pushback that those kind of just weren't used?
I don't know. I mean, but I know from attending that Omaha conference and watching all those videos several times after that there was no time for anybody to be dealing with memos of understanding. This was just the world coming to an end. I mean, there were something like 7 or 8 surgeries in process as the tornado hit. There are also the two hospital systems, I'll try to be diplomatic about this, are incredibly competitive. There's no love lost between them. So, but they both really rose to the occasion here.
No, I just heard that they had agreements to share resources, so when the emergency hit, there was no sharing.
Yeah, I don't think there was a question of sharing. St. John's wasn't in a position to share anything except wounded people and dying people. So, okay, thank you very much.